The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmage, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
No, and we have a 3-hour time block,
okay.
So I figured...
We're not going to get kicked out of here, are we?
No. No, we only have 2 hours.
9 to
2
10,
hours.
10 to 11.
And that's it?
That's it.
Oh.
That's why I was worried.
10:50. Okay, all right, well, let's get going.
Okay, Tony.
All right, oh, one more thing. All right, intro.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmage, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
Listening on the audio stream and on the YouTube can hear it.
But we can't. It's a real pain in the ass.
So we have to be quiet. And then when Tony gives a signal
gives
that it's done,
then
we talk. So you'll see a stop, and that's why we're stopping.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not really dead air. It's only dead air for you.
That's right. So I'm Tony Bemis.
Matt Anders.
And Mary Tomich.
And this is episode 125.
Penguino. That's right.
We're PenguaCon. We were at
Cinco de Mayo.
And doing our it's only the fourth today.
Cuatro de Mayo.
No,
well, tomorrow is
No. Today is May the 4th be with you.
Right. May the 4th, yes. Although today, in Southwest Detroit, which is where Mexican Town is, they've got their parade today. So
well, yeah, because tomorrow's Monday and
it's a work day.
They're all ready and raring to go to work.
Yeah. So anyway, but that's our episode name. And I use Google Translate. Okay, what is penguin in Spanish?
Penguino.
So yeah, that's right. So anyway. All right, Tony.
All right.
So I guess we probably should catch up.
Yeah. So it's been 2 weeks. my van died. And I have to sell my car to pay to get my van fixed. So we're going to go down to one car. It's the car's worth about $2,700.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens to be that the van is going to cost about $2,700 to fix it.
Wow.
Yeah, it needs a whole new engine.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And I don't know how. I mean,
Because Tony is an abusive vehicle owner.
I don't.
Just so you know. He's a vehicle abuser.
One time I went on for oil changes, but that was...
Uh-huh.
Like 2 years ago.
No.
And it's been running great ever since. We're going to go down to one car for a while until I can make some extra cash.
Until his wife complains hard enough.
All right.
So we're at PenguinCon.
Yes, we are. Hey, what was your favorite lecture or session or whatever presentation that you've attended?
Mine, of course.
Oh, of course. That's right. I was there. I gave up going to the EFF session to attend yours, and I'm glad
Brian
I did.
I gave it up too.
Yeah.
I told you guys both you could go. It's going to be recorded. But the Google Hangout crashed again in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Not even in the middle.
No,
maybe
about
like 10 minutes.
That's being generous. So it kind of went under pretty quick. Not the presentation, the Google Hangout.
And, well, I did it with Kevin O'Brien.
Yeah.
And I thought it went really well.
Yeah. I thought so too. It's very interesting.
Kevin definitely saved it.
You know, I'm not going to deny it. He added a lot more than what would have been there, and that really made
and
a big
you
difference.
I think you both add you both brought your unique brand of presentation skills
and you
to it
with no rehearsal and no they didn't even have any discussion about who was going to say what during the presentation before they walked into the room cold.
I thought they did
they
because
did not.
It was
no,
it
and
looked
they,
so
and
nice
they played off each other so well it was
yes.
great it looked
it
totally
did look
rehearsed
really well. We met on Friday night, the three of us were there, and
yeah.
Matt's like, so, when are you guys gonna do it, or how are you gonna do it? I'm like, I don't know, we haven't even talked about it. we did talk
kinda like how we do this show.
Yeah, kinda.
We had about a 2-minute conversation about an hour before the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, I said, I made a presentation, some slides. He's like, okay, I'll just pitch in the middle of it, and I'm like, sounds good.
Yeah, and your slides, what I liked about them, too, is you use that tool that we talked about sometime last year. That
Impress.js.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
It's Struts.io, right?
Yeah, Strut.io.
Strut.io,
is the website. It has a web editor to use it. And
then it'll export the HTML and the CSS, and it just makes a beautiful presentation.
Yeah, so it's web friendly, and you can run it from any HTML5 web browser. And you can save, you can just save it down. There's the one HTML file plus a folder with JavaScript and CSS files. And then you can run it from your local computer also. And that's what I did yesterday. Because the Wi-Fi was flaky.
Shocker. Yeah. I have to say something. Worst Wi-Fi ever at a PenguinCon. This hotel's Wi-Fi is not very good.
No.
It's somewhat intermittent, I guess.
It's somewhat intermittent. That's a good.
Yes.
Mary's being kind.
If you wanted to make it really good, they would have to, it would be what, like $10,000 to have an ISP for the weekend?
Yeah. Something like that.
So it would be really expensive.
But they paid for that last year when they brought it into that hotel in Troy.
All right.
Yeah.
So
what was your guys' favorite talks?
Mine was the talk on sudo and the talk on SSH from Michael Lucas.
Oh, I agree.
Okay.
I agree. I went and ordered those books.
He has great books. I've started the SSH Mastery book, and I just got the sudo Mastery book not too long ago from I bought the SSH Mastery from Tilted Windmill Press, which is Michael Lucas's, and I got the sudo Mastery from Amazon. But if you just search Michael W. Lucas on Amazon, you'll find all his books, and it's sudo Mastery and SSH Mastery.
Well, he said that the link should from his website should be there.
Yeah,
but it wasn't working.
I couldn't find it for when I went to order sudo Mastery, and it just takes you to Amazon anyway.
So. Right. Well, he said he's going to get in and fix that. So, so still go to his website so he gets credit for that.
Tilted Windmill Press is his website. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, so. And I agree, man.
Excellent.
That was
his books are always excellent.
Two of his presentations yesterday.
He's an excellent presenter. He's an excellent technical writer.
That's the same guy that you got that open.
Yes, he's the same gentleman that last year gave me the Open BSD, the Absolute Open BSD book that he had written,
and
I told
one.
Him I would review it, and I've gotten
one.
Halfway through and reviewed the first half, and then if you're waiting for the second half, not happening.
I get
distracted by the shiny, you know, and it's a really thick book. So I got halfway through it, wrote my first half review, and just never went back. But it was an excellent book.
It was. So, yeah, I agree. That was one of my favorites.
But these are much thinner. I will make it through these.
Yeah, I went to his sudo one and got the end of the SSH. The sudo is really
cool.
There's
you can
a
do
lot more to it than just running.
Right.
I didn't realize, and I have to tell you, I didn't realize that you could take sudo and configure it to the extent that you can.
Yeah.
I mean, by group, you can set up groups where.
We definitely do not use sudo the right way.
And then using, and linking it with LDAP servers and enterprise
impressive.
Level stuff is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, anyway, but then a
couple of excellent books that you should pick up. They're just sudo Mastery and SSH Mastery.
Mm-hmm.
So the subtitle for sudo Mastery is User Access Control for Real People.
So why do you have it?
Mary?
I am kidding you. Oh, anyway, man, I agree with you. That was not with that, but I mean with the presentation.
Yeah.
The other one I liked, and neither one of you attended it, was the High Voltage Toys.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh! It was
said, maybe nah.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting because there's a lot of analog and tube stuff, and you can get this stuff in. A lot of it comes from overseas, but you can also get it from stateside too. And the presenter had a printout of his slides with some of the links and things. He was concerned because some of these little tubes and things that he makes these clocks and things. These are the clocks that have the little what do you call it? That you know it. Yeah, there you go. That's it. The Nixie tubes. Yep. You can get some of those, you can get them in Russia or from Russia. He was worried with some of the, embargo stuff that might be going on because of the Ukraine that it's going to affect that. So I was kind of an interesting angle. I never really thought about it until he had mentioned it, but it was a very cool lecture. So. I also got to make a comment too, because, our last show, I had mentioned that I had tried to upgrade my, little netbook to, the most recent, version of Kubuntu.
Oh yeah. And it was a disaster.
And I thought I was going to have to do a factory reset. Right. I did not have to do it. apparently it's kind of like if you take a cake out of the oven before it's fully baked, it doesn't look right. But
right.
You put it back in and let it bake a little more. That's exactly what I had to do. So I didn't put my laptop in the oven.
In the oven. No, set it on 350.
350 for an hour. I had molten plastic. No, I just had to keep, update. I just had to keep updating stuff, and finally it rolled through and I'm good to go on it. Yeah, I didn't bring it today, but
I do with my laptop. I've done in-place upgrades of it all the time, and they don't suggest it, and each time I do it I've had little issues. But it's just like that. You run apt-get update.
You just keep doing it.
Well, you know what?
Or,
I had to drop to a shell. We'll see.
Apt-get works great that way.
Apt-get.
Apt-get dist upgrade.
I did that once too.
Apt-get dist upgrade works great. When I was using Debian-based stuff, I never had any problems. Then I switched to Fedora. Fedora had no method to upgrade in place at all until Fedora 17.
They
17
still don't
18.
Have one, do they?
Yes, they got fed up.
They have fed up. And and it worked great when I went from 17 to 18, when I went from 18 to 19. But on this, my work laptop, when I tried to go from 19 to 20, it just took a shit all over everything. I had to totally do a fresh install. So.
Yeah, well, you know, with my little netbook, it's actually a full little laptop. It's about that size, the size of Matt's. I jumped.
She's talking about the size of the Chromebook, not the 17-inch.
Yeah, that's
laptop.
True. That little laptop there, but it's got a 320 gig hard drive. But I jumped three versions from 12. I think it was a long-term support version. So I tried to jump from that. I waited till the new long-term support was out, 14.04, and I figured it would just jump over. But apparently, in an earlier fooling around with some settings, I think I just said, don't bother to wait, just do them all. So then it jumped from 1204 to 1210, then it jumped from 1210 to 1304, and then I had to keep working on it. And, you know, as I said, it's good to go.
Do you get up to 1404 then?
Yes, it is. It's full 1404, everything works just fine.
All right. Yeah, so. I got some CDs from the release party last night. Mm-hmm. I left them in the car, otherwise I could show you guys. You know, it's cool that George showed us last night. It's George Castro. He's on the server team now. You pull the disc out and you open up the case, you look inside there, they have the image, the logo of the animal, is on the inside of the case. Where
oh,
the
really?
Sits.
The little cardboard case?
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
That makes for such a better distribution that way.
Oh, it definitely does.
Oh, there's a cynic in every room. So anyway, but yeah, so I had to mention that, just getting back to the original thing, I had to mention that I got that thing here. By the way, too, and I can maybe talk about this a little bit later, but, remember how I said that I have to try that distro. Vortex Box? I did.
All right.
And I'll talk about it later.
Cool. So. Well, I think we need to keep moving since we only got about an hour left and we have to be torn down at that point too.
Yes.
All right. So.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
All right. In the kernel news, we have a new release candidate. The main line is 3.15-RC3, and that was released on 4.28. Then the latest stable version is 3.14.2, released on 4.27. Then we have kernel 3.13.11, which is EOL. That was released on 4.22. Then long-term kernel 3.12.18, released on 4.23. Long-term kernel 3.10.38, released on 4.27. Long-term kernel 3.4.88, released on 4.27. and long-term kernel 3.2.58 released on 4.30. And that's it for the kernel news.
All right.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
And for the distros this week.
Yeah, this week.
I'm scrolling through this bi-week. What, Fortnite? What are we calling it?
Fortnite.
Yeah, I think the last
Since we went from a weekly format to a bi-weekly format, we've had a little bit of a problem figuring out what to call it. Mm-hmm. So we did settle on a Fortnite a few shows ago.
Yes, based on some listener feedback listener suggestion. And actually, I think the last one we did was, as I recall, Simplicity, back on the 19th of April.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was just scrolling through there.
Yep.
All right, and the next one, we have NetBSD was released on the 19th also.
Yep, and of course they did that to fix the Heartbleed problem.
Yeah.
That was rampant through the Internet.
Yeah, that was 6.1.4.
Mm-hmm.
The next one we have up is TinyCore Linux 5.3, which is less than 15 megs.
Yeah. That's that little... system to build, to help you build, distros off from. And, let's see, one of the things they did, they actually may have mentioned it there, is that they switched their, timekeeping system from GetTime. They had a script, gettime.sh, and now they're using NTPD. So.
Well, they've joined the rest of the universe.
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
So, and they're better.
But I'd used that TinyCore Linux distribution one time. I was trying to build these, thin clients were just going to connect to a server and then they were going to display what was on the server.
Mm-hmm.
But I just could not, because with that TinyCore Linux, you just get a real base. You've got to build it up to what you want it to do. And I just could not get it working. I wound up, I needed to do RDP, because it was going to be connecting to a Windows server and then doing remote desktop from the Windows server.
Yeah.
Right.
And I just couldn't get it to work.
Yeah. All right, on the 21st, we have Ultimate Edition 4.0. And this time they have Mate and GNOME variants. But I don't know if you remember, 2 weeks ago, or 2 weeks before this release, they had another release, which was 3.9. So, it must again be
Well, I think they just added the Mate and GNOME desktops. So that's what made it.
Okay.
Created the extra release. Plus, so that's what they did.
All right. And on the 23rd, we have Xtix 14.1, which is based on Ubuntu, and has GNOME 3.10 as their desktop. And then we have Parsix on the 26th, which it's Parsix GNU Linux 6.0. They're based on Debian.
Yes.
Debian 7.0.
Yes, and actually Parsix, they've indicated, as you've seen these distros come out with new versions, et cetera, many of them are including the UEFI boot option so that you can use it off newer systems. Unfortunately, Parsix doesn't have that in place yet. So,
does Debian have that in place? I don't think Debian has.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Yeah. So. And they said, what they've indicated is that if you've got a UEFI PC, just to make sure that you've got the legacy boot,
turned on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And, what was I going to say here? The other thing too with Parsix is that, you can use your dist upgrade, going from 5.0, but for older versions, they said you've got to run the installer. So.
Okay.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah. All right, and on the 27th, we have Voyager Live 14.04, and they're Zubuntu-based with XFCE 4.11 as a desktop, and they went through and customized it.
They did. And they didn't, actually for licensing reasons, this particular release or this particular distro, they don't have Flash installed by default. So they've made it very easy to put it on the system, but it's not installed. Another thing that they've done, too, is they've created a whole bunch of aliases. So instead of typing in apt-get update, sudo apt-get update, et cetera, you can just simply do upgrade.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. Of distros installing aliases like that. It's just not, I'm not a big fan at all. Don't get me wrong. In my own Bash RC, I have my own custom aliases and my own custom functions that I have written and put in there. But I know what they do. I know how to use the real commands. And by doing stuff like that, they're going to make people dependent on them because they won't know how to use the apt-get commands and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just not a fan.
But it's like job security, you know, it keeps people coming
back. It's that Microsoft attitude of lock in through, you know, making your stuff.
Dumbing it down.
I don't know. I'm not a fan of it.
I mean, it makes it easy. I guess if you do education along with it, say this is the easy way to do it, but if, you know, you should know the right way to do it also. Anyway.
Yeah. So instead of
doing. Because when you make it easy, like we have a toolkit at work called, you know, NK Next Kit. And it does a lot of stuff for you. Like you can do Magento-C and it'll clear all the caches. And a lot of the level one techs at work just don't know how to do that stuff without the kit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan. You shouldn't be allowed to use the kit until you've learned how to do it the right way.
Then what will happen is that once you learn how to do it that way, you probably won't even bother because you'll say, oh, that's too simple.
Well, it makes
I like it,
easy. It
difficult. All right.
Anyway, moving on.
All right, moving
what's
on.
Next?
We have ZenWalk Linux 7.4, which is known as Zen Live, and they're Slackware based.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this release is the last release where they're going to have a 32-bit version available. They're going to drop that.
Yeah, they're going to go straight 64-bit because nobody's making 32-bit computers anymore.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of them out there. I have 3 32-bit servers in my.
Yeah,
of my own
older
yeah.
equipment, but nothing new anymore. Right?
Yeah, and also apparently the team, I guess the active team on ZenWalk isn't that big, and they're saying that they're not going to be doing as regular updates. So I see that.
I see a fading distro.
The bell may be tolling.
I see the limited time.
Yeah, he said. The main developer said, due to several reasons, I can't do Zen Live releases on a regular basis anymore. I may do some customizations, but not, I guess, regular releases. So hopefully it'll continue. But, you know, those things happen. You go through that life cycle. So
yeah.
Okay.
All right. Next up, we have Tails 1.0. They got to the 1.0.
They got to the 1.0
yeah,
release.
From 0.23 to 1.0.
Yeah. And if you don't know what Tails is, it's the Amnesic Incognito live system.
Yeah.
And it's a system where they have, anonymous web browsing. It's on a CD, so nobody can get in and log your stuff.
They got a lot of publicity, with the Edward Snowden NSA situation last year.
Well, yeah, because he uses Tor.
Didn't Snowden use Tails to do all his?
I don't know.
I think so. I thought I'd read that
to do his criminal activity.
So I think those guys figured we've arrived, and that's why they probably jumped to 1.0. So, one thing to note too with Tails, they've got a kind of a list of known issues, and apparently. If you try to use the Acer Chromebook.
Acer Chromebook?
Is that the C720?
Yeah. No, it's the 710. It's last year's model.
All right. Apparently, the booting will fail with a not enough memory to load specified image. So there's a workaround if you change to,
I'm surprised they can live boot it at all. Mm-hmm. Mine's so locked down, I can't live boot it. Linux distro at all on it.
Well, this is the 720, so you know you must have gotten the version that doesn't allow the live boot.
No, a lot of Chromebooks don't allow it
at
all. Chromebooks are really locked down.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, they do have a workaround for that. You just simply add mem equals 1500 m space boot, and it'll do it. According to all the site, anyway. All right.
All right. Continuing on the 1st, May 1st, we have Nixos.
Nix OS.
Nix OS.
14.04. Yeah. And I tried reading up on this because it looked interesting and they have an interesting logo. But I didn't see anything that really stood out to me. I don't know.
Well,
I
mean, you know, one thing they, actually what you should do, the, from the website, you can download a virtual, box, image. And I did that. I booted it up. I'm going to do a little bit more looking at it, but I haven't, done that yet. However, for this particular release, GNOME 3.10, some experimental support for GNOME 3.10 has been added. And,
experimental, because their main desktop is KDE, right?
Yes, that's correct. It's KDE,
right.
You know, so.
And, but they've also updated it to the very latest systemd.
Mm-hmm.
That's another big thing in the release, is that it's got the most current systemd.
Yeah, and the, what they've done also too is they released this now with the firewall enabled by default, but Adobe Flash Player is not enabled by default, so I'm not.
Raise your hand if you still use Adobe Flash Player at all.
Oh yeah.
Outside of Chrome, because inside Chrome it's not the regular Flash Player, it's Pepper.
Oh no, I use Chrome.
Oh, is it?
Okay. YouTube video this morning.
YouTube is using HTML5.
No, it said that Flash crashed, and
I've seen that every once in a while.
Was using HTML5 and it said Flash crashed.
I'm wondering, maybe it's an old video or something.
So yep. Anyway, most of the people in our audience are still using Flash, so I stand corrected and I'll still say, stop using it.
All right, moving on.
We have a BSD release, an OpenBSD 5.5. And it's saying now it's 64 bits on all platforms.
Yep.
That's right. And of course,
platforms with 64 bit.
Yeah.
Because OpenBSD is still supported on VAX.
Yeah. And of course, those guys are the security conscious guys. And whenever they release, they always have a little song, and you'll be hearing it later.
Yeah, it is
today. It's our outro.
It's going to be our outro music.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool.
All right. We have Open Mandriva LX 14.0.
That's
which
right.
Which is the latest stable update.
Phosphorus.
For the customized KDE desktop. What is it called?
Phosphorus.
Phosphorus.
That's right. And I went out to the website, and what they've said there, they said it's taken from the Greek word the Greek word for light bringer. So that's their hope for the work. But one thing they've got available here, it's the first release of Open Mandriva LX that incorporates support for EFI booting. So
UEFI.
You'll be able to do that. But they said the little caveat, they've done limited testing. So, they welcome your feedback if you run into problems.
And what else they've done is they have, souped up 3.1, 3.11 kernel in there, which has been super customized to provide excellent system performance in a desktop environment.
And, they also transitioned from MySQL to MariaDB. So they said it may break some applications, but
it's
make
so
sure
compatible. It's not really.
Well, they do, but they did issue a caution on the website.
Yeah, they have to just because they're switching. But it's.
Yeah. But yet again, another one moves over.
Well, Red Hat did too. Mm-hmm. Works in 7.0. MariaDB is going to be the default database.
So. Yeah.
I wonder what we're because then it'll be in CentOS. I wonder what we're going to do at work.
Yeah, that's a lot of.
Because we've tuned MySQL hard.
You can just keep using it. It's just the default.
Yeah, Oracle will support you.
Yeah, right. So, anyway.
All right, last on our list is released yesterday. No, Friday, the 3rd. It was Solid XK 2014-05.
The 3rd was yesterday?
I guess it was. Solid XK, the X and K stands for XFCE and KDE.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get the you can install it in either way.
Yep.
But you looked into that a little bit, didn't you? One of your reviews, Mary?
I did. And what I liked about this particular distro is that they've got three flavors of it. I mean, and we're not talking desktop environments. We're really talking use cases. They've got kind of a home version. They've got more of an enterprise, and they've got something called back office, and it's designed for kind of. nonprofits and other similarly situated entities, and they include there's like a invoicing system. They've got human resource management system, just a number of different things, and their website has further information about it. But I went out and took a look at a couple of those apps. Really nice. There's a document management system
that's cool.
Available. Yeah, for that. So, I mean, you can get these particular applications separately and then incorporate them into another distro, of course. But what they've done is they've just identified this whole palette for you, kind of to make that job a little easier.
All right. All right. And then we're on to the top five of the week.
Okay.
At number five, we have Tails.
Wait. I gotta scroll down a little bit. Okay.
With 1813.
And
trending up.
And number four, we have Voyager with 1874.
And trending up.
Number three is Debian with 2344.
And trending up.
And number two is Ubuntu with 2390.
And trending down.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 2906.
And trending down.
And you know, that's something that we talk about every once in a while. That these top five of the week, it's just kind of a fun thing to look at. You know,
it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything like for being popularity of Linux, what distro is better than the other. It's just something that DistroWatch puts on there, and that's how many people have actually clicked on their page for each of these distros. So it's some fun I like to look at and we talk about, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the end of the distros, and I saw a couple of people walk in while we were talking, so I want to say hi to everybody.
Yep.
I know Gib walked in, and I don't remember everybody, and I don't think I've seen you before. What's your name? Yeah.
She wants to remain anonymous.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for coming. So... I thought we'd involve a few people.
Oh, yep. Thanks, Tony. That's a good idea.
We should have them do a It's Alive. They can give us trivia, Linux trivia questions
later.
Yeah,
stump the panel.
Stump the panel, Linux trivia.
Sure.
We've got a list of questions.
Fire your Google up and let's go.
All right. Okay, so.
All right, so next up is.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
All right. Yeah. So what am I reviewing this week? Actually, I've got a couple of things I want to talk about. One is VortexBox. You'll recall that on our last episode, that was one of the, distros I had a release. I had a distribution release. And so I always say, oh, I'm going to have to try it. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to try it. And I did. So I downloaded the distro, and I've got a, old Dell computer that serves as kind of a media center for me. And actually all it did is just ran stock Ubuntu, and I had it hooked up to my television. I had a Ethernet cable in the back coming directly from my router. So I just thought, you know, I'm going to take that off and give it a try to see what happened. So I did. Yeah. And what I didn't realize, because I didn't read the instructions ahead of time. Well, you know how it is. You just
instructions.
Go
what are those for?
I was figuring, and maybe it's there, but, StartX did not produce it. It basically installs, it's basically a headless server as far as I could tell, media server. And what you do is it will generate an IP address, and then you just take another computer that's on the network, you browse to that IP address, and there's the whole configuration setting or dashboard there. So yeah, I've got and what's nice about it is that the VortexBox lists Logitech's media server as one of the protocols that it supports, and I happen to have a Logitech Squeezebox radio upstairs.
Yeah.
So it's really cool because once I had to get the accounts kind of set up and get them all on the same network. And once I got that taken care of, then I could, from downstairs, I could go ahead and set up, program what I wanted to play on the radio upstairs. And I had the radio turned up, and sure enough, the radio upstairs changed and started playing whatever I had put on there. I mean, it's really nice because they've got TuneIn, and those of you who have maybe used the mobile version of it, TuneIn is basically a radio app. It's available on the Android, Google Play and iOS. Yeah, I've got it, and I've listened to local radio stations, and You can set it up that way. So,
so TuneIn will grab, will connect to your Logitech media server?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I've been looking for one for my phone.
Yeah, you can, what I did is I ended up playing some radio stations upstairs off my Logitech radio that. Yeah, so I was, in a Vortex box. Oh, by the way, too, it's based on Fedora, and I do have to say this. Those of you who listen to this podcast on a regular basis know that I kind of ripped that installer, Anaconda.
Mary doesn't like Anaconda.
Oh, it's kind of...
Just because she's...
Fedora's fine. Once you get past the Anaconda partitioning situation...
It's an excellent installer. It's fine. It was totally user. It was user error.
But anyway, what I wanted to mention about this particular version is that as long as you get your partition set up ahead of time, the installer for VortexBox takes you right through it without really much of a problem at all. And then I did notice, now the most recent Fedora release is called what, Heisenberg?
Heisenberg.
Well, it said, welcome to Heisenbug. Now, I'm thinking, now, did the Vortex people just do that as a joke, or is that really a typo?
I'm sure they did it.
Laughed when I saw it, but that was really the only problem. It wasn't even a problem. It was actually kind of funny. So, but anyway, so that was just my little 2 cents worth regarding VortexBox. Again, I run it at home now, and I like it. I mean, maybe I'll find something better, but for right now, it works just fine. And I'm going to be hooking up, I've got a couple of external hard drives, about 500 gigs worth of music and all sorts of other stuff. I'm going to be hooking that up and streaming that through this Vortex box.
Media servers are cool stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
That Logitech media server, I've had that running in my house for almost 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. And you don't have to have a Logitech piece of hardware to run it. I think we talked a little bit about it last week. They have apps you can run. There's a command line app, and then there's a Java app program you can run on your desktop, and that you can either run it on your local home network, or if you're away, like when I was at work,
mm-hmm.
All you have to do is open up a SSH port to your server that's running it, and the Java app will automatically do the SSH tunnel in and connect to yours and start streaming all your music that you have at home. Or what you have set up on your mm-hmm. server, and then you can do the same thing through command line, set up the tunnel, and then start up the command line.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
It was pretty slick, so I'm enjoying that media server.
Yeah.
So instead of just running a stock distro, I guess it is stock VortexBox, but it's nice.
Very cool.
So anyway, I wanted to chat about that. The other thing I want to chat about as far as distro reviews is Gobo Linux. Now, Gobo Linux has been around for a long time, but it went on hiatus from 2008 until I think late last year when it released its first alpha. And in April, it released 2 betas. So I thought, I think it released its first beta in January, its second beta in April, early April, around the 7th or 8th. And I thought, I'm going to take a look at it because once a distro gets to its second beta, you kind of think it should be polished enough that even though it's a beta, you can look at it and evaluate it and review it.
Not so.
Well, anyway, so, and normally I don't do reviews of beta versions. However, when a distro has an unusual aspect to it, I'm willing to check it out. Those of you who are regular listeners know I looked at Cubes OS, which is that just security conscious distro,
yeah,
which
siloed.
I really like.
Totally
yeah,
siloed.
I mean, it runs on a Zen hypervisor and you have all these various little virtual machines that are connected, but you've got to kind of...
Does it use virtual machines or containers? I thought it used containers.
They probably are containers. I guess I use the term virtual machine in kind of a broad, non-technical way. But anyway, so today's distro characterizes itself as an alternative Linux distribution. So how alternative is it? Well, it has completely redefined the entire file system hierarchy.
Boo. Done. That's it. We don't need to talk about it anymore.
Oh, wait a second, though. Yeah. So running ls from the command line is only going to show you 6 directories. 6. Sorry. I waved 5 fingers at you. Which is better than the 1 finger you wave at me a couple times. But anyway, but stalwarts such as Etsy and Dev and Var are nowhere to be seen.
What? That's done. So, don't even go any further.
So, well, there goes my review, Tony. Thank you for listening. So would this pared down structure mean that I've arrived at distro nirvana, or would I spin in a new version of dependency hell?
Oh my God.
Let's find out. Well, first of all, the Vitals, Global Linux, the maintainer, there's a group of developers. It's actually based out of Brazil. By the way, did you guys see that news article on the Olympics? That they are pretty far behind. It's a little scary. It's because down in Brazil, I think they just like to party.
Well, they put a ton into the World Cup. They're doing the World Cup this year.
It's going to be interesting. But anyway, Global Linux, this most recent beta release runs the 3.13 kernel and the review desktop. Well, actually, there are two. I started off with the second beta, and that had KDE just by default. And then I ended up switching to the third beta, and we'll find out why in a few minutes. And that had Enlightenment 17 on it. Now, the live environment, in the live environment, you've got Firefox is a default browser that has no Office suite. It has no mail client. You're up to installing those yourself. And the file manager, well, of course, when I was looking at it in KDE, it was Dolphin, but in Enlightenment, it's the Enlightenment file manager. One thing I discovered too is when I needed to do some checking of things using a terminal, and unfortunately I saw this entry terminology, and I thought that was just the Global Linux terminology.
No, it's a terminal called terminology.
Yeah, it took
and
me
it's,
a couple
it's
of
a very different kind of terminal.
Yes. But anyway, so I'm going to first run through the install process. When you install it, you've got some meager choices as far as how you want your partitions formatted. You got ext 2, 3, or 4. So I picked 4 because that was the biggest number. And then the next screen displays 3 package options. You can install the base option, which is basically it requires only 1 gig of storage on your system. The typical option 1.3, and then what's called the full option, which is 2 gigs. And then there's a window below that will show you exactly what's going to be installed with each option. So you can go through and, again, this is an NCURSIS install. So for those of you who aren't familiar with that, think of a Debian install where you've got those, you know, about 4 different colors and you've got to kind of tap. You hit enter or you hit tab or it's
a real installer, in other words.
It's very rudimentary. Oh, but it's effective. I mean, you cut right to the chase. But anyways, it asked me several questions, including, whether I wanted to add an additional user in addition to the root user, and I said yes, of course, and I supplied that information. and then I also enabled super user privileges for that user so that I could then use sudo if I wanted to, apparently. And interestingly enough, you'd think that Bash was going to be the default shell in Global Linux. Wrong. It's ZSH.
Yeah, ZSH is getting real popular. There's the one guy at work is a big ZSH user. He actually contributes to the ZSH project, and he wanted to make it his default shell, but the guy in charge of like pushing that out through Puppet told him he couldn't make it his default shell because we have a bunch of Nexus functions.
Well, based on Bash.
And they're tested in Bash, tested working in Bash, but not ZSH. They told him he couldn't use it as his default shell.
Yeah, well, ZSH is also the default in PCBSD.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
I installed Bash and put that in my path,
as my default shell,
yeah, in that profile file. So anyway, but now as the install progressed, it's kind of interesting because what really caught my eye is the fact that there was line after line after line of installing program and then the name of the program, installing program, name of the program. And we're going to talk about why that is in just a couple of minutes. And then that was followed up by what are called the post-install scripts. And by the way, Global Linux uses Grub, so I was kind of happy to see that. I mean, yeah, Lilo's okay, but not many distros use it anymore.
Slackware is the only distro I know that is actively using Lilo.
Mm-hmm. So now what was interesting is in the beta 2, when I booted to the install environment, it had a few interesting moments because as Global Linux booted, each successful step was met with a screen update that said, yes, hey, it works. I'm like, print it out on the screen. And then it said, Yahoo! And an exclamation point. So you'd see this one after another after, and I got kind of a kick out of that. I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. When I tried the beta 3, all of that was gone. But it booted a lot faster because it was booting into Enlightenment 17. So maybe they were just doing that for entertainment purposes. But I have to admit, I was a little entertained by it. Now, once you, going from zero to desktop is a manual process. First, you boot to a login prompt or a login screen, and you've got to, it'll present you with the system information, and then there's your login prompt. So you need to log in, and then typing start X, of course, is going to fire up the X server and get you going and give you your desktop. So that's a little something that it's not automatic. You got to do it yourself. And that's not a big deal, because Gobo Linux is not designed for new people. So they said in their FAQs.
They made it known.
Yeah.
Not noob friendly.
Yep. And by the way, too, it's usually when you think about installing a distro, usually you've got about four or five standard default folders in your home directory. Gobo Linux just gives you one desktop. That's it. There's no documents folder, no pictures or photos.
First they F with the file hierarchy.
Yeah.
Then they screw around with my home directory.
Well,
I'm not going with Gobo Linux anytime in the near future. It irritated me when Red Hat decided to do away with user bin and use, I mean, with S bin and you and bin and symlink them to user bin and user S bin. That was bad enough.
Well, yeah. So but anyway, but with these guys, so, and the reason why, and I said they went from beta 2 to beta 3 fairly quickly because I could not, when I tried to get out to the internet, I had some problems getting out to the internet. And not only that, but whenever I opened Dolphin, because keep in mind that Beta 2 used KDE, and I think one of the reasons why they switched is because they have an open bug in their bug tracker for probably for about 6 months. You get this cannot find MIME types, inode forward slash directory, inode forward slash block device, inode forward slash care device, C-H-A-R device.
Character
device. Yeah, I was quoting verbatim. But anyway, so every time I opened Dolphin, it couldn't find the stuff, but I could still get into some things. And they said they haven't been able to figure out why it's doing that. So they figured, well, our workaround is we'll switch to Enlightenment 17 and release the next beta. So that's what they did. Now, I said earlier that Gobo Linux consists of six directories. You've got data. You've got your lost and found.
Data.
Mount.
Data. Who has ever heard of a data directory in the Linux file system hierarchy? Exactly. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I am just telling you. Listen, I go through this pain so you don't have to. But anyway, so they then had mount, programs, and system, and users. One interesting thing, users. Now
instead of home, instead of slash home, they call it slash users.
Yeah.
Windows.
I'm telling you.
And inside of users, they had, the root users, directly.
Instead of in slash root?
Instead of its own. It was inside there. Yes, I know.
The pain.
Oh,
the pain.
But there's one little, I wasn't even annoyed by that, Matt. Here's what annoyed me, is that they use camel case for their directories. So they're not all lowercase. You've got, for their directories and different things that you need to do.
So camel retarded.
Case. So.
They're just shooting themselves in the foot. Yeah. This distro is going to go nowhere.
So anyway, we'll talk about programs. So if you want to see what's installed, you look in this directory because here's why they do this. All of the legacy Unix directory structure is there. They have got a script that hides it. It's called Gobo Hide. So you can do Gobo Hide.
Oh, because that's a good thing.
What? They believe so. What? Through a utility called Gobo Hide, you can toggle a directory on and off. So, Matt, you can turn all of the legacy directories on.
Okay, but if I install a real distribution, they're all just there. I don't got to turn anything on or off.
Well, that's true. That is true. Don't shoot the messenger, Matt. But anyway, so they've done this because they just wanted to simplify things, but they also wanted to create a way in order. For example, if you're going to search for something, the system directory is basically full of symlinks to the actual programs in the program directory. Now, the program directory allows you, all of the files that are needed for a particular program are contained there, so you can install more than one version of a program. Say, for example, GIMP. You could install every version of GIMP available, and they've got them in what are called recipes. Their recipes are basically consists of the files and other things that you need in order to run that program. And they've got a program called, it's called actually compile. It's not a program. It's really just it's a method for installing. And it will run, these recipes to install software that you've designated. Now, these recipes are scripts that will download source tarballs. They'll unpack, compile, and install them. I tested it. And I installed Jack, you know, the audio, mixer, that console control, that little Jack control.
Yeah.
I installed that. I was able to install,
But then were you to get, able to get Jack configured and running?
What do I look like, an audio engineer? No. I was only testing to see if I could install it. Because actually, I did have some problems installing a few things. They said, as long as the recipe is in their repository and all dependencies can be satisfied, you'll end up with a nice souffle. Otherwise, you'll get burned by the stove. I experienced both. I was able to successfully install some things, and then I ended up with some unsatisfied dependencies, either because the thing was so old that I couldn't find the dependency, or the system couldn't satisfy it. So, again, you can do it, but it's kind of a crapshoot.
Sounds like a half-baked package manager to me.
Half bake, I like that. That's right. And because of its directory structure, again, as I said, you can install multiple versions. So, I'm not even going to rate this because it hasn't come out as a final version
I'll
yet.
Rate it for you. -2.
But I found Global Linux to be kind of interesting in some ways. I was not at all impressed with Enlightenment 17 as far as how they've implemented it, because
Enlightenment's a pretty decent desktop.
I've liked it. I think it's an older version. And
no,
I think
17, I think, is the current version.
Is it? Okay. Well, I think they kind of slapped it on there because of the KDE mess that they had in the second beta. But anyway, it was, I found it to be kind of an interesting system for at least experimentation. Certainly would not be a production level system for me. But, me, I kind of like my stuff polished and finalized. So anyway, but that's Global Linux. Just a different distro.
Yeah.
All right.
Different is right.
It was. Very different.
All right. I think we should keep the news short since we only have about 15 minutes left.
I only have two things for it.
So. Okay.
Yep, I got a couple.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't find anything, so it works out perfect.
It will work perfect.
All right, so the news.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
So, Matt, did you find anything?
I did find anything.
did you?
And I'm mildly
Can you
retarded.
Say that again?
I did find something. At IT World, they have a story on Google deals made Android phones more expensive lawsuit claims. There was a lawsuit filed on Thursday that accuses Google of strong-arming device manufacturers into making its search engine the default on Android devices, driving up the cost of those devices and hurting consumers. The consumer class action complaint filed in the U.S. District Court of Northern District of California alleges Google does that by making secret agreements with manufacturers that also require applications such as YouTube and Google Play Store to occupy the prime real estate on the device's screens. Hasn't Microsoft been doing this kind of crap forever, though?
Yes.
So
yeah, you see those little stickers saying approved for whatever Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't see the big deal.
But
you don't.
Yeah. I'm not a Google fanboy or anything, I swear.
All right.
And then I also got this other one was just kind of neat. If you go to I'm not going to read the URL. If you just Google for Intel password checker, it's kind of a nifty website. It's got a big disclaimer that says, do not enter your real password. And it'll strength type your password that you want to try and use it. It's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
That, not really news, but just a neat thing.
Sorry. Tool tip. There's your tool
there
tip.
There you go. That's my tool tip.
Your web-based tool tip. All right. Well, I've got, I actually have one thing, and it's not Linux related exactly. It's more, PCBSD related. Do you know that the PCBSD project is going to be, they're actually in the process of developing their own desktop.
Oh, wow. Oh, really?
KDE, they tend to default to KDE.
Yeah, I thought they were a KDE-centric distribution.
Yeah, well, yeah, they are, kinda. Although, PCBSD 10.0 did include, I think it was GNOME and Mate.
Yeah, but as alternatives, if you just install the default install, you get KDE.
Yeah, and they also have quite a few tiling window managers if you choose to use that type of display. Those are available too. But they are starting to work on Lumina desktop, and the reason why they're doing it is because all of those desktop environments we just mentioned, of course, have kind of generated in the Linux community.
Sure.
And apparently
it probably takes some work to get them integrated with the tools to work with BSD. So.
That's correct. And so then the logical question is, so does that mean you're going to not have KDE? And they quickly said, no, we don't think so. I mean, that they're going to drop it. I'm thinking, I don't know. If it takes a lot of work and Lumina ends up being really nice and easy.
I'm sure it'll still be there and Lumina will be the desktop.
Yeah.
But I'm also sure that they won't put the work into making the tools work with the BSD. That'll be hit or miss.
Yeah, that's probably. So I think it'll be kind of interesting to see how that turns out. So that was just announced, I think last week. So we'll see how things go. So that was my little bit of news. My other bit of news Matt had, which was that lawsuit.
Oh, so sorry, Mary.
That's all right.
But glad I got to it first, because otherwise I had nothing.
That's all right. All right.
I didn't have anything for news.
Okay, what are we moving on to then?
Guess we have listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
Or did you have a KDE corner? Or?
No. Well, actually, I don't think I do.
No.
No, I don't.
All right. So, listener feedback.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
We have a couple things.
Yeah. And just again, for those of you who came late to the show, that's only dead air for you. On the live stream and on the recording, there's a soundboard that's playing a clip when we do that.
And it plays a phone number that may not be valid anymore.
Oh, yeah. We need to fix that. Anyway, we got a couple emails. Mike emailed us saying, why aren't we on a regular schedule?
Because he likes the show.
Oh, yeah,
We are on
a regular schedule.
It's every two weeks.
Every two weeks.
We used to be every week.
Yeah, we used to be every week.
It just is so difficult.
And then we decided that, we do have lives. So we stopped doing it every week.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, we did
two back-to-back, so we shifted the schedule. But
Right. So it's actually a bonus for you guys that you got two episodes.
Yeah.
Instead
of skipping an episode.
Two for the price of one.
That's right. And then we have Anthony emailed us. He was asking about the quality of our YouTube video. And we actually have a really nice camera. And Mary got it for us. It's a 720p, right? I think it is, or 10.
Yes, it is.
And but the problem is that you have to have the horsepower on the PC that's running the thing, and we have a really old P4.
And not only that, Google really...
Yeah, there's bandwidth things also that...
They really stomp on the video to get it into a higher compression so that it doesn't take as much bandwidth to stream it.
Right. So my response is, if you want to donate some money... I mean, I can put a PC together for really cheap, like $100. And I could have a streaming.
Well, we could use, this has got 4 gigs of RAM on it. Would that be enough?
What's the processor? That's what's important.
Yeah.
It's at least a dual core.
Yeah, it needs.
Five? It's got a 5 in it.
If you go to our website, there's a donut.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. Because I could bring my other, I could bring my Kubuntu 3 gig laptop. Hey, we just got $20.
Yeah,
I'm sure Gib wants that back. But anyway, maybe we can do that. So, but he's right. That's a nice camera, and I lent it to us.
Oh, okay.
But well, I mean, Anyway, so Yeah, that camera was like, it was a fair amount of money. And I was hoping that we would get a nice clear picture of us.
Yeah.
I wore my best t-shirt.
And you know what's funny is actually when we went from the lower quality camera to this one, the picture got worse. Just because it's trying to process so much.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I think
we're going to try to fix that.
Yeah.
That was Anthony?
Yeah.
All right, Anthony, we're going to try to fix that. So we'll either have a blank screen or, well, we'll see.
No, it'll get better.
Yeah, it'll get
better. All right.
We did have some other feedback from somebody named Brian.
Yeah.
I don't know who that could be. And he said the 80 columns actually goes back to the IBM key punch cards. Cause last time we were discussing different terminals.
Yeah.
And
oh,
we
yes.
said about, I said how Google has a style guide for shell scripts and they're limited to 80.
80 characters wide.
Right. 80 characters wide per line.
Columns?
And I remember that. Yeah. I remember those cards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You drop them in that hopper and that's how you'd enter your program.
Yeah. And I didn't know it went that far back. I said it went back to the VT-100 and Brian emailed us and told us said, no, it goes back all the way to the punch card.
Right. Right. And if you're in audio only, Brian's sitting here with us.
Yeah.
In the audience.
He's sitting there in the front row.
So thank you.
Friend of the show, Brian. We think he is.
And I think that's it.
I do believe
all
so.
All right. Well, then.
So then we're going on to our...
Featured music of the week.
Our music this week. And I need to pull up VLC.
That's right. Our music this week, as I think we mentioned at the start of the show, for those of you who weren't here for that, OpenBSD just released a new version, and that particular project, they release a song every time they do, and those songs are pretty good.
They are. I mean, and they're eclectic as far as styling goes. Like, they're not in all in the same style. They're very different
very
styles.
Very different genres and styles. Yeah. Exactly. So we thought it was appropriate to include one this week just because they released.
So
even though we're a Linux, Sunday morning Linux review.
Yeah. It's the most recent OpenBSD song.
Yeah.
That's right. And here we go.
Oh, I'm running BSD on this.
Not just a word again.
And also, for our audience, I'll play the whole thing while we're breaking down. It's just we're kind of tight for time right now.
So, all right.
I guess that's it.
That's it.
So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 125.
Penguino. I stole it. I did it.
Penguino.
Penguino.
All right. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, have a good fortnight. See you
in a fortnight. Turnabout is
here. Yes,
play.
It is. See ya.
All right. There we go.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. I just pack my PC and leave.
It took us about 45 minutes to set it up, but teardown should take a lot less.
See, I don't really have a broken wrist. I just put this on here so I can get out of it all.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comments, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. Interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.